The fourth degree, boastfulness, the opposite of the ninth degree of humility, retinence until questions. But when vanity increases and the bladder begins to be inflated, it becomes necessary to loosen the belt and allow a larger outlet for the air, otherwise the bladder will burst. So the monk, who is unable to discharge his superabundant store of unseemly merriment by laughter or by gesture, breaks forth with the words of Elihu, "My belly is as new wine which wanteth vent, which birtheth the new vessels." He must speak out or break out, for he is full of matter to speak of, and the spirit of his bowels constraineth him. He hungers and thirsts for hearers, at whom he may throw his banalities, to whom he may pour out his feelings, and let them know what a fine fellow he is. But when he has found his opportunity of speaking, if the conversation turns on literary matters, old and new points are brought forward, he airs his ideas in loud and lofty tone. He interrupts his questioner and answers before he is asked. He himself puts the question and gives the answer, nor does he even allow the person to whom he is talking to finish his remarks. When the striking of the silence gong puts a stop to conversation, he complains that a full hour is not a sufficient allowance, and asks for an indulgence that he may go on with his gossip after the time for it is over, not to add to the knowledge of anyone else, but to boast of his own. He has the power, but not the purpose of giving useful information. His care is not to teach you or to learn from you things which he does not know, but that the extent of his learning may be made known. If the subject under discussion is religion, he is forward with his visions and his dreams. He upholds fasting, prescribes vigils, and maintains the paramount importance of prayer. He enlarges at great length, but with excessive conceit, on patience, humility, and all the virtues in turn, with the intention that you, on hearing him, should say, "Out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaketh," and that a good man out of his good treasure bringeth forth good things. If the talk turns on light subject, he becomes more loquacious, because he is on more familiar ground. If you hear the torrent of his conceit, you may say that his mouth is a fount of such buffoonery as to move even strict and sober monks to light laughter. To put it shortly, mark his swagger in his chatter. In this you have the name and description of the fourth degree of pride. Remember the description and avoid the reality. With this warning, go on to the fifth degree, which I call eccentricity. The fifth degree, eccentricity, the opposite of the eighth degree of humility, observance of the general rule of the monastery. A man who prides himself on being better than his fellow men thinks it a disgrace if he does not do something more than they do, whereby his superiority may be apparent. Therefore, the general rule of the monastery and the example of its senior members are not enough for him. Yet his anxiety is not to be, but to be seen to be better than they. His effort is not to lead a better life, but visibly to surpass others, so that he may be able to say, "I am not as the rest of men." He takes more credit to himself for having once gone without a meal while others were having theirs, than he does in having shared in a fast of 7 days. One little private prayer of his own seems to him more commendable than the recitation of all the psalms set for an entire night. At mealtimes he has a habit of casting his eyes all around the tables, and if he sees anyone eating less than himself, he is annoyed at being outdone. He begins severely to cut down the amount of food which he had hitherto recognized as his necessary ration, because he is more afraid of loss of credit than of the pangs of hunger. If he catches sight of anyone more shrunken and sallow than himself, he cannot rest under what he considers to be a disgrace. And since he cannot see his own face and the aspect under which he presents himself to onlookers, he examines his hands and arms, which he can see, beats his breast, taps his shoulders and loins, and from the more or less attenuated condition of his limbs, forms an opinion as to the paleness of color of his face. But while active in all his private devotions, he is indolent in public worship. He keeps vigil while in bed, and goes to sleep in his stall. He sleeps all night while others are chanting the early psalms. When the vigil is over, and the other monks are resting in the cloister, he alone lingers in the oratory. He coughs and spits, and the ears of those sitting outside are filled with the sights and groans from his corner. By his silly and singular action he has established a high reputation with his more simple brethren, who quite approve of what they see of his doings, though they do not detect their motive, and, by the commendation which they bestow on him, they aid and abet the wretched man's mistake.